Today on Annenberg Radio News.
Morrissey, he's not afraid to say anything. He speaks his mind.
We take you inside one of LA's most unique karaoke bars. Good afternoon from the University of Southern California and welcome to Annenberg Radio News for Thursday, October 9th, 2014. I'm Priyanka Deo. President Obama is in town today. He arrived just a couple of hours ago. ATVN's Kent Machinchi, was at LAX when the president landed, and he's in the studio with us now. Ken, what can you tell us about the president's visit?
Yeah, President Obama, he gave a quick wave coming off of Air Force One. He got in the helicopter, headed straight to Santa Monica, and purpose of his trip this week, next 2 days actually, he's visiting Cross Campus in Santa Monica. He's holding a town hall meeting with millennials about the importance of the midterm elections and also their importance to the economic progress of the country. And he tonight is headed to Gwyneth Paltrow's house for a much publicized fundraiser this evening. Lots of talk about that in the news lately. And tomorrow he is attending a Democratic National Committee fundraiser before heading to San Dimas to announce the creation of the San Gabriel Mountains National Monument. And there's lots of traffic expected today, this evening and tomorrow. And he is headed to San Francisco this weekend after all of his business today and tomorrow.
All right. Thanks, Ken. While the president was whisked off to Santa Monica after he landed, the media had to sit in the press box on the tarmac for several hours. Diana Crandall was there with other members of the press while they waited for the president to arrive.
When journalists get their credentials approved by the White House staff, they must open their entire vehicle for search by dogs and law enforcement at the airport. They are also required to surrender all belongings and equipment for search. Journalists routinely go through this lengthy process for the privilege of standing and waiting outside for several hours, rain or shine.
Something like this, a president flying in or flying out, you pretty much have to be here just in case something happens. You know, generally not, but you don't want to not be here the time that it does happen.
It takes President Obama about 40 seconds to walk from Air Force One to his waiting vehicle, but it's an all-day affair for the journalists waiting to capture pictures, video, and sound of his arrival.
Anytime he comes to Southern California, I'm here. He's the leader of not only our country, but arguably the leader of the free world, and his decisions affect not only people in the United States, but people across the world every single day. And it's important to know what he's doing all the time.
While they wait, journalists talk, sit, and snap pictures of other planes taking off from LAX. I'm Diana Crandall, Annenberg Radio News.
That was reporter Diana Crandall talking with freelance photographers Frederick Brown and David Burrow. LA Unified officials met with staff at Jefferson High School this morning to talk about incomplete course schedules. They're keeping many students out of their required classes. Yesterday, a California Superior Court judge ordered the state to fix scheduling problems at the South Los Angeles High School. Taylor Haney had this report.
Eugenio Salazar is a senior at Jefferson High School. For the first 8 weeks of the semester, his schedule was all wrong.
I mean, I didn't have the classes I needed. I was taking like classes, like ninth grade classes and stuff, and it wasn't right for me. Cause I mean, I'm supposed to graduate this year. I'm trying to stay behind or whatever.
The judge's restraining order describes Jefferson High School's chaotic classrooms, study halls instead of instruction, and students being let out early due to a lack of resources. Some, like Salazar, have even been assigned to subjects they've already passed. David Sapp of ACLU Southern California is one of the attorneys who filed the case back in May. He says the high schoolers aren't getting their required courses because they just don't exist.
And the consistent cause is that these schools just don't have enough actual course offerings available to meet the needs of students.
As Sapp indicates, Jefferson High is only one egregious example of many like it. Incomplete scheduling and fake classes are statewide problems, and they've been going on for several years.
There are schools across the state of California and these are almost exclusively schools located in low, highly impoverished low-income communities, almost exclusively students of color, that literally just don't get the same number of weeks of instruction and education in the course of a school year, and that builds and compounds over time.
The state of California is required to step in, identify students who need help, and develop a plan with LA Unified by next Tuesday. For now, Eugenio Salazar's schedule has been fixed, though he says classrooms are packed with up to 50 students in each. He hopes the scheduling issues won't hurt his final year of high school.
Hope nothing goes bad anymore or wrong. I mean, it's my senior year and I don't want to like make it seem like a bad experience for me.
The ACLU plans to file similar requests for intervention at other schools later this fall. Taylor Haney, Annenberg Radio News.
A new study says Los Angeles is one of the worst cities to be disabled. The study looked at 23 key factors, like employment rates among people with disabilities and job openings. The publishers of the study, Wallet Hub, also evaluated the quality of life and accessibility to healthcare. Overland Park, Kansas, was deemed the best city for people with disabilities. More than 100 Los Angeles Department officers and Los Angeles County Sheriff's deputies participated in the Mission Possible on Thursday, an event designed to help law enforcement better understand autism spectrum disorder. ARN's Jordan Plout reports.
So today is about also what the chief just said, making good partners. Good partners make safe communities and make good families and coworkers.
For LaShawn Hunter-Harris, having an autistic child with social difficulties can be hard. Large crowds, even those at a children-friendly place like Disneyland, give her son acute anxiety. Bringing him to a public event where police are present is a challenge, but raising awareness is worth the effort.
I think that it's good that the peace officers get to see different children with different levels of the disability so that they can know when they're out in the public, like how to spot it more easily. Because by me having a child with it, when I see something that other people might be like, oh, what are they doing? I'm like, oh, they have autism, or oh, like it's okay. I know how it is, so it's not that big of a deal.
The Mission Possible event is co-sponsored by the LAPD and Autism Society of Los Angeles. The event is based on safety stations where officers and deputies are paired with autistic students from the Los Angeles Unified School District. Director of Police Training for the LAPD, Luann Pinnell, says that a lot of one-on-one time is crucial to making awareness stick.
We know so many of their interactions happen in 3-4 minutes, so they often don't get time to spend time with somebody and understand the difficulties that they have. So by spending 3 and 4 hours with a student who has autism, they get to see a little bit of the difficulties that they might have, the communication challenges that they might have, or sensory difficulties. We really believe that by training this way, they won't just have a one-day training and forget about it. They will have an experience that will stay with them their career.
Pinnell pointed out that the training is not exclusive to autism.
Many of the skills that our officers are learning here today have to do with different kinds of disability. It doesn't have to just be autism. And it can kind of expand to working with other people who might have some difficulties or deficits.
LAPD officer Allison Ashnault has attended this event for each of the past 3 years. She says the event is a learning experience for both sides, but perhaps more so for police.
We're here to protect and serve the entire community, not just one segment of it. And so if we can better understand all aspects of the community we serve, we're just going to be better police officers.
The Autism Society of Los Angeles credits the event, now in its 5th year, with increased police awareness about the disability community. After the August LAPD shooting of Azelle Ford, who had diagnosed mental health issues, both sides agree that preparation is the best method for prevention. Jordan Plout, Annenberg Radio News.
New York City airport cabin cleaners are on strike over safety concerns of Ebola exposure. A striking cabin cleaner says their job is unsanitary, but they're not provided sanitary equipment. The union representing these workers is scheduled to conduct training that will protect against exposure and spread. Additional airport screening will be implemented to catch those who may be contaminated. Gustavo Paradis was helping his wife clean when he and his 27-year-old son Caesar were taken away from their homes. Today, the Paradis family called on immigration officials to let them go. Victor Figueroa has more on the story.
Cesar Paredes had been living quietly in the United States for almost a decade. But 3 weeks ago, immigration officials detained the family man, leaving his wife and three children to fend for themselves. The family's immigration attorney, Jessica Dominguez, says the government shouldn't be focusing on detaining people like Cesar and his father, Gustavo.
They both do not represent any high-risk priority to the government at this point, based on the fact that they have community ties. In this case, both of them have not only legal permanent resident relatives, but in the case of Mr. Cesar Paredes, he also has three United States citizen children, and he does have relief in court.
Dominguez also says that the family's demand to see a warrant wasn't respected when officials entered their home. While President Obama's plane was touching down in Los Angeles today, Antonio Bernabe, a member of the Coalition for Humane Immigrant Rights of Los Angeles, or CHIRLA, called for the administration to do something to address the problem of immigrant detentions.
The immigrant community is paying the price, for the broken promises of President Obama. One more time, we got another year with record number of deportations. More than 1,000 people deported a day. That means hundreds of families being separated every single day.
To Caesar's 6-year-old daughter, Nayari, the situation is clearly taking an emotional toll. She pleaded to Obama to bring her father home.
I miss my dad. I want my dad back. Please, Mama, I love my dad.
63-year-old Gustavus Paredes has a court date set for October 15th, and the family is trying to have him released on bond before his appearance. But Caesar will have to stay in detention. Officials say he was sent an order for deportation, but the Paredes family say they never received it. Victor Figueroa, Annenberg Radio News.
Immigrant rights groups from across the state rallied outside Congressman Kevin McCarthy's office in Bakersfield today to protect the rights of unaccompanied immigrant children. They want the government to enforce a Trafficking Victims Protection Act, signed in 2008, which guarantees hearings with an immigration judge and access to a lawyer. Tens of thousands of children from Central America have turned up at the U.S.-Mexico border unaccompanied in the past year. McCarthy, the Republican House Majority Leader, voted to remove these protections from the law, speeding the deportation of thousands of unaccompanied minors. Tessie Borden, with the Carson LA, says children shouldn't be casualties of a political fight.
Children ought to be protected, and they should be put beyond any political considerations on either side.
The activists will present a letter signed by more than 25 immigrant rights groups to McCarthy's office and hold a candlelight vigil starting at 6 p.m. this evening. Mayor Eric Garcetti announced today that a South L.A. native and former gang member will be the next poet laureate for Los Angeles. Luis Rodriguez is an award-winning author. He will be the city's literary ambassador for the next 2 years. Garcetti called Rodriguez's work an example of how powerful and impact literature can have on young lives. Rodriguez spoke about his home city.
To truly love L.A., then, you have to see it with different eyes. Askew, perhaps, beyond the fantasy-induced Hollywood spectacles. L.A. is also known for the most violent street gangs, the largest skid row, the greatest number of poor. I don't forget any of this. Yet, I loved L.A., and I always will.
Rodriguez is best known for his memoir, Always Running, La Vida Loca, Gang Days in L.A. Rodriguez was a heroin addict and almost went to prison before cleaning himself up. He moved across the country as a working journalist and later as a poet. He has 15 books across several genres. Rodriguez ran for vice president on a third-party ticket in 2012 and has been involved in politics most of his life. It's a beautiful day here at USC. Blue skies with temperatures in the mid-70s. Tonight, we'll get down to the low 60s. This weekend, you're looking at partly cloudy skies and temperatures hovering around 80 degrees during the day and the lower 60s at night. Later on Annenberg Radio News, I speak with one of the organizers for tonight's Vision and Voices event, Voices of South LA. The USC men's hockey team may not be able to draw in a coliseum of fans like the football team, but a rowdy crowd of supporters still cheer on the team from the sidelines. In this sound portrait, we hear from the team's captain about what it's like to be a player.
My name is Tito Islas. I play defense for the team. I'm also a captain this year, and I've been playing since the 2012-2013 season. So this is my third season. Over time, hockey has had a reputation of being very violent because it is the only professional sport, and I think only in professional levels you're allowed to fight. Not everybody's like going around looking for a fight. It's typically kind of a thing where you're policing yourself. Like if the guy runs your goalie and after your goalie had already covered the puck and he just comes up and hits your goalie really hard, obviously, a team only has one or two goalies, three goalies maybe. You want to protect that player. That's a very vital player for your team. I don't typically try to go with superstitions. Every once in a while, if you're on a win streak, maybe you won't shave your beard or something. Some people are extreme and they're like, oh, well, I'm not even going to change my boxers. But, I want to try and be a little bit cleaner than that.
That sound portrait was produced by JJ Maldonado. The Trojan football team heads south on Saturday. Evan Bedrovich gives us a preview of the 3-2 Trojans game this weekend.
The USC football team heads to Tucson on Saturday to take on the Arizona Wildcats. For the first time in nearly two decades, the Wildcats are undefeated at 5-0 and ranked number 10 in the country. USC fell out of the top 25 rankings after a last-second Hail Mary touchdown loss to Arizona State last weekend. But oddsmakers in Las Vegas are betting on the unranked Trojans to beat a so-far perfect Arizona team on their own turf. USC is favored in the game by 2.5 points and have beaten the Wildcats 10 of the last 12 years. Kickoff is set for Saturday night at 7:30 over on ESPN. Evan Budrovich, Annenberg Radio News.
The contrast between the wealth of USC and the impoverished community where it's located has long been a source of tension and opportunity. Tonight, a Vision and Voices event sponsored by USC Annenberg explores the relationship between the university and the community. Earlier today, I interviewed George Villanueva, postdoc scholar from Annenberg, who helped organize the event. Tell me a little bit about this event that's happening tonight, Voices of South LA.
We really have three goals. One goal is to kind of historize. It's more to kind of give a historical perspective on South LA and really consider USC as part of the wider geography of South LA. And a second goal is really to take stock of some of the neighborhood changes that are going on in the area, but really also to really kind of highlight some of the great civic action and community voices that are actually taking place in South LA to really make it a better place.
We have a fabulous line of panelists. Do you want to tell me a little bit about them?
Sure. We really wanted to give a diverse perspective and diverse perspectives of South LA through four different panelists that actually do great work in South LA. One is a long-time community organizer in the South LA area who's worked with South LA youth for a very long time. His name is Alberto Retana from Community Coalition. A second panelist is a Los Angeles City Human Relations Commission staff person named Francisco Ortega, who really does a lot of dialogue and really kind of human relations work in the area of South LA. And third and fourth is really related to kind of media and communications and journalism, is we have one longtime journalist who's chronicled African-American cultural and political issues since the 1992 civil unrest. Her name is Erin Aubrey Kaplan. And fourth, we have Sara Suleiman, who is a beat writer for Streets Blog LA.
Now, let me ask you, can students get involved in this, in community building and perhaps some of the things that are going on outside of USC in terms of just service or volunteer work?
There's many organizations that are willing to take interns and also have students create projects and serve almost as community consultants and community ambassadors to the area and create their own kind of improvement in the area of South LA.
Now, why would this be important for undergrads and grad students to take part in?
There's a history of USC sometimes being a little bit disconnected from the community. So it's really a way to really engage the community through positive work.
Why don't you tell us where and when this is going to take place?
Sure. It's taking place tonight, 6 p.m. at the Annenberg School for Communication, the first building. And it's going to be in the auditorium, G26, 6 o'clock. And right after, we have a reception on the second floor patio. It's catered by Earl's Grill, a great South LA eatery. So there's going to be food and there's going to be activities. And really, we're looking forward to having that great candid discussion about how to actually be better neighbors to each other.
Filmmaker Werner Herzog is known for his deeply philosophical works. He was at Aero Theater in Santa Monica last night, where his 2011 documentary Into the Abyss was screened. Elizabeth Nonnemaker sat in on the discussion afterward.
Werner Herzog has been everywhere. Whether battling the snow-choked forests of the Siberian taiga or quietly examining cave paintings thousands of years old in France, his cinematic gaze is unflinching, ever seeking to identify and reveal the poetry of his subjects. However, sometimes that gaze lands on places we'd rather not notice. Into the Abyss tells the story of a triple homicide committed by two teenaged men who killed because they wanted to steal their victim's car. Michael Perry, one of the convicted men, was executed by the state of Texas while Herzog made the film.
What fascinated me about Perry was the stunning amount of nihilism. I couldn't understand it, and I didn't know how to cope with it. And I said to myself, that's a man with whom I want to talk. A bank robber who fires around and kills one or two people and runs and then is captured is not that... It's not so intriguing. The logic is so simple. And it doesn't allow you this very deep look into the abyss of the human heart. I have been in dangerous situations, and I have seen really dangerous men. When I saw the picture of Perry and when I spoke to Perry, the entire time that I was sitting there and talking to him, there was this gnawing knowledge inside of me, in the back of my head, telling me, you will never see a man as dangerous as this kid.
Herzog speaks with many others who were affected by both the crime and by the criminal justice system. The families of the victims, Perry's accomplice, Burkett, who only received a life sentence, Burkett's father, imprisoned across the street from his son. Herzog even speaks with an executioner who administered over 125 lethal injections for the state of Texas before quitting his job. Hanging over the entire film is the moral question of capital punishment, and it remains a question. Herzog is forthright about his opposition to the practice, but Into the Abyss is nonetheless a stunningly impartial story. Herzog made 6 more films for television about death row inmates. He could have made even more, but decided to stop.
There's an economy with your intellectual capacities and there's an economy with your emotional capacities. If you offer me $10 million for doing the next one, I wouldn't do it. I'm glad that I can leave it behind.
The Death Row documentaries are important, perennial, but difficult to watch. Fans are probably glad he's moved on too. His next project is a biopic called Queen of the Desert, though it unfortunately won't feature his signature Bavarian-accented narration. Audiences can safely expect a sensitive, deft, and illuminating film in keeping with the rest of his work. Elizabeth Nonnemaker, Annenberg Radio News.
Eastside Love in Boyle Heights host a monthly karaoke night affectionately named Morrissey-oke. Morrissey fans gather to perform some of the most cherished songs from the once lead singer of the Smiths.
When I get up there, I get nervous at first, but like once I just hear the music and it's like I get into it. Morrissey, he's not afraid to say anything. He speaks his mind and he doesn't care. I admire that.
He understands a part of the heart that a lot of people felt back in the day, like in the 40s, 50s, 60s, Skip James, Etta James, everybody, a lot of 60s soul singers. They understand how heartbreaks are made, and he explains a little bit more about them. And now I know how Joan of Arc fell. Now I know how Joan of Arc fell. I've never gone up there. I would love to, but I'm a little too nervous to go sing up there.
My first time, I was like, I don't know if I could do this. I was like all embarrassed, but after that, it's fun. I kind of feel like I relate to it. I know that he wasn't from a broken family, but I was. And like the stuff that he talks about, I'm just like, oh, I could so relate to that, you know? When I'm sad, when I'm dealing with a breakup, when I'm with friends, being happy. You know, I can always relate to all his music.
This sound portrait was produced by Megan Farnsworth. Now it's time to hear the sounds of another place that's uniquely Los Angeles.
Sonic City! Sonic City!
Yeah, let's go, you guys!
The USC Free Running Club is a club I started with a few friends a couple years ago. Basically, we're interested in the art of parkour and free running, which, if you don't know, is an art of movement. It's kind of like, you can call it urban gymnastics, where you run around, you jump on things, climb, you do flips. It's really fun.
Sonic City!
And now we check in with Patricia Silva to see what's coming up on Annenberg TV News at 6 p.m. on Trojan Vision.
Over 1,000 jobs are up for the taking today at a downtown Los Angeles job fair, what job seekers had to say. A new exhibit opens at the USC Cinema School, why students can't get enough of Dennis Hopper. And a fraternity is making amends with local community members, but they weren't the ones who stole from the community in the first place. What's going on the row? Coming up on ATVN at 6.
Thanks, Patricia. There's a backstage fight taking place for control of the Greek Theater in Griffith Park. The LA Parks and Recreation Commission was supposed to decide today on whether to let Nederlander continue its contract to operate the amphitheater or give it to Live Nation. But after a long meeting today, the commission said it needs more time. It has scheduled another meeting for October 23rd. Any decision must still be approved by the LA City Council. And that's it for this Thursday. We had help today from Nia Frank, Janet Jamie, Kaylin Norwood, and Selena Say Reynolds. Our board operator is Lexi Macavinci. Logan Healy is the newscast producer, and the executive producer is Victor Figueroa. For all of us here at Annenberg Radio News, I'm Priyanka Deo.